Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Practicing basics, consistency in what we're doing.
Guys getting real banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Unconquered Podcast. This is your host, Jason Staples. Oh, lots to talk about. Lots to talk about on this episode. It was very close to just putting an episode out either Saturday night. I'll probably start actually doing more rapid responses as well. Instant reflections after games as well. But it's very close to putting one out on Saturday or Sunday. Decided to hold off and get a little bit more perspective, take a few more looks at some things, make sure that I was really measured in what I had to say. It's very easy in the wake of an 0-2 start and a loss like the one that we just saw on Saturday to a team that Florida State was frankly better than, had no business losing to. It's very easy to make poor diagnoses and to say some things that aren't necessarily true. I've seen a lot of that on social media. I've seen some of that from other members of the media. And I don't want to be someone who jumps to conclusions on things. I want to take a measured look. So that's what I'm going to try to do in this episode. Try to be even and fair in how I evaluate what's there, and just basically do this. It's very important in these cases to be as dispassionate and as devoted to the why things are happening, and what is actually happening, because it's very easy for fans. And even for media who cover the team and get wrapped up in expectations and what's around the team, it's very easy to get emotional and to blame the wrong things, to not see what's actually happening, and more specifically why things are happening. So we're gonna try to do it a little bit differently. On this. Before we get any further, though, I do want to thank the program's sponsor, Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Luis is, of course, a trained photographer and videographer. If you've been listening to this program, you know by now that he is the best option for listing your home in the greater Jacksonville area. Give him a call at 850-443-5797. Email him at Luis Marquez, LuisMarquez at kw.com. Mention that you heard about him through the Unconquered Podcast, and he'll include a free home warranty to make sure that everything is as it should be during the listing period. And if you are in the market to buy a home in the greater Jacksonville area, nobody's going to outwork Lewis and that in the team around him to make sure that you find exactly what you're looking for. So make sure that you go through Lewis if you are going to do any real estate business in the greater Jacksonville area. All right, well, given that, we're going to go ahead and get down to it. The first thing I'm going to say is that, dang, really? Really? I mean, it's not that surprising that Florida State lost to NC State in this game. It isn't surprising. I'd said on the preview podcast that had this game been played in Carter-Finley, in Raleigh, I would have picked NC State to beat Florida State in this game. I thought it was, in terms of the matchups and what NC State brought to the table in this game, I thought it was that close. So it's not that surprising that Florida State lost the game, but the way they lost the game, my goodness. Oh my goodness. I mean, had Florida State gone out there with a true freshman quarterback and he'd had a Chris Winkie day, going back to when Winkie lost in 1998 in Raleigh, 24-7, throwing six interceptions. You know, young quarterback throws a few interceptions, and NC State gets advantageous field position and manages to come out with a win despite a courageous effort by Florida State's elite defense. Yeah, you know what? I would have been no surprise. Would have been, well, you know, that's what happens. You have a young quarterback. You know, you're going to expect some hiccups. But what you don't expect is for that elite defense to get beat. You don't expect the young guy to go out there and play well. You know, only one turnover that gave the ball to NC State on the 2 yard on their 2 yard line, so 98 yards away. Throwing the football well, you know, managing the team well, moving the football up and down the field on offense. You don't expect that to be what's happening. And then the defense that looked so incredible against Alabama to be what ultimately gives up the game. That's the thing that I'm still, frankly, I'm very surprised. I'm very surprised that is the primary cause. The primary reason that, I did not expect to see NC State, first of all, be able to run the football in key moments against that defense. And second of all, be able to get a few of those key big plays to turn the game, to score 27 points. I thought NC State would score somewhere around 17, if you remember. That was a projection I had for them. I figured they'd be about 17. I might have been adjusted that up to, say, 21 to 24 and been a little surprised that they scored, you know, say, over 21. But 17 to 21, I would have expected that in this game. NC State can move the football on offense now. They've got a physical running game. They were able to run it on Clemson last year. They were able to run it some on Florida State last year. They've been able to run it all year. Ran it up and down the field on South Carolina in the first game, despite losing that game thanks to just an overall cluster of bad special teams play and other things. But, you know, they had 504 yards, 5.09 yards per play against South Carolina in that opener and lost. So, yeah, you know, they can move the football. And the biggest thing is, and this is something that I didn't put enough emphasis on in the pregame. I didn't think he was good enough to really beat Florida State's defense repeatedly. Ryan Finley is a good quarterback. He's a quality quarterback. And the thing that matters most in this case is Finley is the kind of quarterback who gets rid of the football quickly and doesn't make mistakes, doesn't throw interceptions. You look at Finley the last couple years, he threw a grand total of 8 interceptions last year, 0 interceptions on the year this year, came into the season riding a long non-interception streak, or came into the Florida State game with a long non-interception streak, which should have ended in the Florida State game with Derwin James' acrobatic interception that was called back wrongly, I believe. But yeah, Finley is the kind of quarterback that it has always been a pain in the butt for top-level defenses and for pressure defenses like Florida State, because he gets the ball out so quickly and you can't really get a whole lot of pressure on him, and he's going to force you to be real tight in short zones and to tackle and defend well, and if somebody gets out of place, then that's enough. But they weren't able to force a whole lot of mistakes, and he was able to basically dictate in the backfield because you can't pressure him. And the thing is, I mean, I've seen some fans that are like, oh, you know, the problem is Florida State needed to blitz more. They needed to dictate on defense. They needed to keep, you know, take it to the quarterback. The problem is when you've got an offense that's getting rid of the football within a second or within, you know, 1.3, 1.4 seconds, you can't blitz that. If you blitz that, you're just getting more out of position. You actually have to cover that. Now, my complaint there is that, if anything, you might want to cover that with a little bit more press, particularly in the slots. Maybe try to disrupt some of those shorter routes. And you know, maybe use a robber or something to prevent NC State then from using all of the shallow crosses and mesh and various, you know, pick route, rub route stuff that they do to perfection on teams that do press and do play more of that style defense, which I can tell you, that's why Florida State did what they did. The reason they played the particular variations of coverage that they did is those are variations that are designed to be able to take away what NC State likes to do most, which is a bunch of shallow crosses, a bunch of rub routes, a bunch of mesh stuff, and all this stuff that runs your man-to-man coverage players. Run, if you're going to try to get aggressive with them and jam them and all this at the line of scrimmage, particularly in the slots, they're just going to continue to run your guys into each other, run them into the umpire and all this, and get free yards, get, you know, potentially big plays. So Florida State basically tried to play a little bit off and come up aggressively and hit, which is generally a pretty good solution against that. And for the most part on the game, they were successful with it. The problem is that they gave up just too many plays. And if you're going to take that approach, you need to be disciplined. And there were just too many breakdowns in discipline, particularly eye discipline, for Florida State's defense to survive in this one. And, you know, again, it's something you just can't have particularly with a veteran defense and a veteran secondary, and particularly with some of the people, with a couple of the guys that were most guilty of some of those violations. Nate Andrews has no business making some of those mistakes. He's a sixth-year senior, or fifth-year, I guess. He's a fifth-year senior. You can't have that. You can't make those mistakes, particularly if you're athletically limited. You can't make those mistakes if you're going to play, particularly if you're going to play that style of defense, trying to take away what NC State does best in those cases, and then allow them thereby to get some of those big plays that they got. Because, I mean, the thing is, it's not that Florida State's defense got dominated. They didn't. Not even close. They gave up 5.21 yards per play. Not exactly elite, but certainly not bad. The problem is they gave up really, really untimely, really poorly timed big plays. And that you can't do. That is really bad. I mean, but you think about this. Alabama last year had what everyone would concede was an elite defense. One, you know, people were talking about it as one of the best defenses of all time last year. And last year, that defense gave up 43 points in game number 3 to Mississippi, gave up 30 points, and by the way, Ole Miss averaged 7.15 yards per play on that Alabama defense last year. And Arkansas averaged 5.63 yards per play and scored 30 on Alabama last year. That defense was still elite. And so it's worth noting that there are some people out on social media that are saying Florida State's defense just isn't elite. Obviously. Look, they gave up 27 points to NC State of all teams. They gave up 27 points to NC State. That's not what an elite defense does. Alabama was elite last year. Alabama's defense was elite last year. Gave up 7.15 yards per play to Mississippi, same Mississippi team that Florida State had a better time with. Gave up 30 to Arkansas, 5.63 yards per play. This Florida State defense still is elite. But the thing is, you cannot. They just made the wrong mistakes at the wrong times. And in a game where you don't have the security of a Jameis Winston under center and an experienced offense that's ready to roll and ready to outscore, and, you know, the team that you're playing against, Alabama scored 48 against Ole Miss last year. They scored 49, I'm sorry, against Arkansas. If you don't have that, then you can't afford to make those mistakes on defense. You just can't. You've got to make sure that you close a team out, that you do everything possible to protect the young offense and to put them in position to succeed. And that's the problem. But again, and I think Bud Elliott put it well, and you know, he's talked about this on social media. There's been a little bit in terms of podcasts and all this. He was right. NC State got almost all of their stuff, almost all of their production came on five drives. Florida State completely shut them out, like an elite defense should, on every other drive. I think they had 12 drives. Seven of them resulted in nothing. The other five resulted in all of their points and all of their yards. By the way, Clemson as well, last year, elite defense, gave up 7.13 yards to Florida State. Gave up the one that is still inexplicable, 43 points, 6.54 yards per play to Pittsburgh last year. That's far worse than what Florida State's defense just did against NC State. But again, if you're going to be a championship team, you've got to be good enough to make up for it when your defense just doesn't quite have it. So getting back to the idea of these key situational things, NC State's first drive, they got decent field position, drove down, no penalties, but you did have a bust on the screen pass that ultimately stalled in the red zone, got a field goal. Okay, fine. You can maybe expect that on the first drive, especially with 21 days off. And I will tell you, 21 days off will affect the defense in particular because you're not tackling the same. Once you get into season... So I'm a little bit all over the place here, but again, it's important to talk about all of this stuff. Any coach will tell you that the biggest improvement that you expect during the season, the biggest improvement of any team, of the lifespan of any team, is expected to be between game one and game two. And the reason for that is you come out of camp, and you're not always sure what you can do, what, you know, you got to get to live action to really figure out what you're able to do. Game one, you figure that out. And you make a bunch of mistakes. Both teams are always a little bit sloppy in game one. Actually, the Florida State-Alabama game was remarkably well played, given that it was game one, by both teams. You get all that stuff, and you get to correct all the mistakes that you make in game one, because there's just some stuff you're going to make mistakes in game one. It's going to happen. But you get to correct those mistakes for game two. Game two, you get to finally clean up and polish all the stuff that's left over after game one. And then game three and following, you're becoming the team that you're going to be the rest of the year. That's how this works in terms of the lifespan of a team. Any coach will tell you this. Florida State got game one and then didn't get to correct all that stuff and get to see it and rep through it in game two. Didn't get it. Got a 3-week layoff, so basically went through a whole new camp where, again, you're not going to be tackling, you're not going to be game speed the same way. You can't simulate that. Not in practice. You can't do it. And so the thing that's going to affect, particularly early in the next game, is your defense. Your defense is going to have a little bit of difficulty in terms of, you know, some rust in terms of angles, in terms of tackling, that sort of thing. That's going to happen. So you expect that, and you hope to clean that up over the course of the game. And you try to do some tackling drills. You try to make sure that you do that stuff, you know, in those couple weeks to stay as fresh as possible. But you are going to engage with some of those issues. In any case, getting back to the drives. First drive, no penalties. Everything, you know, basically things went straightforward. You had the one big screen play on 3rd and 9, I think it was, that resulted in that drive ended up resulting in a field goal. Okay, well it's not too bad. But here's where things get interesting. And this sort of changed my perspective on how Florida State's defensive performance actually how poor it was in this game. Because I came out thinking, man, they were really bad. Much worse than I expected. And then when I started going back, I went, wait, huh. Second drive. Here's what happened. This is the second scoring drive, second drive of the game as well. So NC State gets the ball on their 24-yard line. And on the first play, they throw a double pass for 25 yards. It's a bust in the secondary, but they you know, the pass isn't perfect, and they're able to recover and keep that from being a touchdown. That gets them to midfield, to actually the NC State 49. Well, okay. Run for 4 yards. Okay. And then they have a pass play that does not go well. Ryan Finley has to scramble. Ends up it's a screen, I believe. But Finley ends up having a scramble. Ends up throwing the ball at the feet of his receiver. Brian Burns comes in just a little bit late. Gets called for personal foul. And this becomes, by the way, a key theme of all of the remaining NC State scoring drives. 15 yards. Now NC State's 32-yard line. They're in field goal range. NC State runs for minus two. Complete a slant route for 16. Now they're down to Florida State 18. Run for three. Run for 12. No gain. Incomplete. Then they run a direct snap to Samuels on a running play, get 1 yard, get down to the two, they stop him, and then NC State scores on fourth and two by inches. But if you look at that drive is decided by basically three key plays. The double pass, 25 yards, the personal foul, 15 yards, and then the fourth and goal. Then their third scoring drive, which gets them to 17 points, gets it to 17-7 at the half, is the total bust. And it's just inexcusable that you have a player that's in man-to-man coverage that winds up looking in the backfield, gets affected by toss sweep action, and lets his guy go straight up the middle. Derwin James gets juked out in a really difficult situation for a center fielder because you've got a two-way go as a wide receiver there. Not much. That's a really tough situation for him. You expect him to make that play. You don't expect many players to make that play, but you expect him to make that play. And that, again, shows a little bit of the rust at that point in terms of angles, in terms of tackling. So you've got that drive. You get the bust. Okay, so now, and by the way, that bust, you take that bust out. And again, this is always bad when this happens. But, that you get this argument a lot of, well, you know, if you just take out the big plays, then, you know, the yard per play average wasn't bad. But in this case, this is the one bust, right? 71 yards. You take that out and you go from 5.21 yards per play, which is what they had, 365 total yards on 70 plays, to 4.2 yards per play, which is outstanding. That's elite defense against any Power 5 offense, let alone a quality offense like NC State. That's how close things are. You know, Florida State gives up 4.9 yards per play to NC State. You're coming out of that game going, all right, that was a good defensive performance. That one play totally changes the game in that regard. And yeah, you expect to hold them maybe to even less than that with an elite defense. But, you know, sometimes you're going to give up plays. But, you know, even if James makes the tackle at, you know, 30 yards upfield, you're still looking at 4.5 yards per play. That's okay to a good offense with a quality quarterback. That's okay. And then you don't give up that key touchdown at the end of the half. Anyway. So then we get to the scoring plays in the scoring drives in the second half. And one came on a drive where you had an interception overturned due to a pass interference call where both of the wide receivers on that side of the field, you had a tight end and you had a receiver, both in tight on a short yardage play. It's a third down play, third and one. Both of those players start out by blocking. They're blocking the corner and the coverage players that are responsible for them there. They start out by blocking them and you know trying to play action that along with the play action in the backfield, and then the quarterback throws upfield. as the receiver pushes off the corner, corner is still engaged because the receiver was just blocking him. Ball deflects off the wide receiver, who actually had the opportunity to catch it, and Derwin James intercepts it. You can't call that interference. You just can't. You can't block and then suddenly turn around and expect the ball to be there and not and for that to be defensive pass interference. That you just can't do that. Anyway, this crew did. So you get a turnover, key turnover, that gets converted into a pass interference. And this leads to a field goal on that drive. Along with, by the way, a key offside penalty on the next play that gives them a first and five. Then they are able to get a big rush on the next play, and they wind up with a field goal after actually a pretty good goal line stand, inside the red zone there, where they were able to get a sack, actually. So far, of the drives we've looked at, we've had a total coverage bust. Okay. And the other two of the four drives, we've had a key penalty that took the drive from being a stop to being a score. This doesn't even factor in the next major situation here where the field got flipped. Instead of NC State being behind the chains around the 24-yard line, the ball's around midfield. When they punt, due to the inexcusable targeting call on Jacob Pugh, that didn't lead to a score, but it's worth mentioning. And then you have the final scoring drive, fifth drive, where that drive was extended on third and nine by a retroactive timeout after a delay of game. What gets me is that you had three officials, including the officials on the sideline of NC State, that threw their flags for delay of game. And then somehow that's retroactively changed into a timeout. And then they get 10 yards on third and nine. Any one of these breaks, whether it's the coverage bust, which is not a break, that's just a bust, but in terms of the personal foul call on Burns, the interception overturned, the timeout there, any of those gets changed, and Florida State probably wins a game. And Florida State's defense only gives up, say, 17, which is what we expected. Should have been expected. And then you get over to the offensive side of the ball. Well, actually, no, I'm gonna stay more on the defense for the moment. Thing is, the defense by and large, like I said, played well. But it's the situations, and Fisher has talked about this since he's gotten to Florida State, about, you know, teams can, you know, you can outplay a team and lose situations and lose a game. Well, here's case in point. Florida State's won a lot of situations since Fisher's been at Florida State. They lost situations in this game, even though they won, they largely dominated the game. And when you go back, when you go back and watch this tape, it's like, wow, yeah, the defense looks a little rusty. There's a few missed tackles and some missed run fits, this sort of thing that you're going to get. But other than that, it's just, you get the one coverage bust, and then you get those penalties that change stops into scoring drives. And you get a quarterback that got hot. Finley's a good quarterback, guys. And girls. Gals. He got the ball out. And you know, he's going to get some notice. I mean, I don't think he's an NFL starter, but he'll be carrying a clipboard somewhere in the NFL. And it is infuriating how NC State just seems to be able to find these unknown quarterbacks, and suddenly they've got four guys starting in the NFL. Go figure. And all four of those guys are guys that got red hot, had their best games of their career against Florida State. But dang. So again, you know, as I look through all this stuff, you know, the defense played pretty well. The defensive line, by and large, did a great job. Now, once Matthew Thomas went out, there was a drop-off. Adonis Thomas actually played pretty well. But there is a drop-off from Matthew. And then when Pugh went out of the game, that really hurt Florida State's ability to stop the run. The linebacker play in this was not as good as it was against Alabama. And that was the primary difference in terms of stopping the run. There were some missed fits there. Defensive line played pretty well. Nottie had a very good game. Fred Jones had a good game. The secondary, aside from Nate Andrews, was good. And, you know, like I said, it was just a few situations. You're a few situations away from not only winning the game, but winning it going away. And we'll get to that now on the offensive side. On the offensive side, first things first, Blackman played great. Blackman played better than I expected. He had a little bit of a rough start. Fisher did the right thing in terms of asking him to come out throwing. It's what we talked about on the podcast in pregame. Fisher was going to come out and throw on first down with him, try to get him some easy short throws, or you know maybe let him loose, let one or two loose downfield, let him uncork the arm, but basically give him some low risk throws early on to develop some rhythm. He missed a couple early. That's okay, but he settled down and kid balled out. Quite honestly, Blackman did some things in this game that I'm not sure DeAndre Francois has done yet as a quarterback at Florida State. By the end of the year, I think it's very possible that Blackman is better than Francois would have been by the end of the year. It's possible. I think it's more possible now than before I saw this game. And that's all despite repeatedly getting targeted by NC State's defensive line, particularly Chubb, who was not called for at least two obvious targeting efforts against Blackman. How, particularly on the wheel route that he missed underthrew to Rasul, which was a great call, by the way. You know, that's the one that scored against Miami last year and would have been pretty close to scoring against NC State there. It would have been at least, you know, a 30-yard gain. Rasul makes one guy miss. It's a touchdown. But how that play where Chubb comes in high, lowers his head, and tries to make helmet-to-helmet contact, and just because Blackman shied away from it, he didn't. How that's not targeting and what Jacob Pugh did is targeting is unreal to me. Unreal. Because I mean, the thing is, all you're doing is you're penalizing outcome. You're not penalizing whether a guy actually targets the helmet. You're just penalizing whether somebody's helmet gets hit. That's totally incidental half the time. And if a guy's smart enough to try to get his head out of the way, so here's the thing. If I'm Florida State, I'm telling my quarterbacks, no, don't shy away from it. You know, stay in there so that you get the targeting. That's the opposite of the way the rule should work. The targeting rule should be prohibiting players from targeting that contact, not penalizing a player for accidentally hitting a helmet and rewarding a player for actually targeting the head but missing it. I'm baffled by the implementation and the enforcement of this rule, particularly by ACC crews. And Flanagan's crew in the ACC is the worst. The worst with that. Could have called spearing also on the NC State linebacker who hit Blackman on the goal line play where he, it's a good call, wide receiver fell down on his break and Blackman scrambles a little early, tries to get it up the middle. NC State linebacker comes in low, lowers his head, and spears. Again, should be spearing, should be an automatic ejection. Illegal contact with the crown of the helmet. But no, it's not noticed. I don't know what it is, especially with the Flanagan crew. I don't know what it is. I don't know why horse collars and targeting for some reason, in Florida State games, just don't seem to get that stuff doesn't get called in a way that resembles logic. Amazing. Amazing. But anyway, like I said, Blackman played a really, really good football game. And, you know, he showed some instincts and the ability to process quickly in certain situations and on certain concepts that were really encouraging. Now, he missed in some other cases, particularly some wide open checkdowns to his backs. A couple cases, if he, you know, fourth down play late in the game, if he just sees Jaquez Patrick out in the flat, who was wide open from the beginning, if he just takes a look out there, that might walk in for a touchdown. Again, Florida State may win the game as a result of that. Just one thing, guys. But, you know, those are things that a young quarterback's going to miss. What was not good is the number of times where Florida State had it was apparent that Florida State had a chip on, was supposed to be chipping the defensive end, Chubb, and the running back or the tight end, sometimes lined up as an H-back or, you know, in the backfield, but, you know, the player responsible for chipping him didn't chip him. That's not good. That led to a couple hits that, you know, of course, then get blamed on the offensive line. But Blackman did not. The offensive line played well in this game, particularly in the first half. The offensive line dominated NC State's front in the first half. Blackman had all day to throw in the first half. The only times he got hit were well after the throw and on one early vertical route where Chubb beat Kelly on an inside move. You're going to get hit as a quarterback periodically. That's going to happen. It was not unusual. Those are fine. Offensive line dominated the first half. NC State made a couple adjustments. They did a better job getting some pressure in the second half. But a lot of the pressure they got were on green dogs where, you know, they're checking to see if the back is chipping or staying in, and then they're going to send a backer or delayed blitzes, different things like that. Oh, and a few others were overload blitzes where, you know, they had an extra guy that, you know, based on the type of protection that Florida State's going to run, they're going to have an extra guy that the quarterback's responsible to get the ball out before that guy gets there. That's just the way it works. And, you know, particularly with a young guy, that's where you've got to hit your back in the back, coming out of the backfield or whatever, because that overload is a lot of times depending, is that would be the guy that would be, that would actually be defending the running back coming out into the flat. So as soon as you see that overload blitz coming, you go ahead and you hit that and you take your gain. But, you know, FSU, Fisher called a good game in this game. They ran it up and down the field. They outgained NC State both in total offense overall and in yards per play. You know, against that defense, against that defensive line, 5.88 yards per play is plenty good. You expect to win. And I read the wrong stat earlier. NC State against FSU's defense, 5.21 yards per play. Florida State averaged 5.88. It's plenty good enough to win. You have that difference and no significant turnover, you know, in the game. Particularly if you block a punt, you expect to win the game. But defense gives up a key bust, gives up a few major penalties that shift the field. The offense happens to stall just at the wrong times. 5 scoring opportunities that you get nothing, essentially, on. There's your game. Situational stuff. And it's not as simple as, oh, well, they just, you know, abandoned the run. No, they didn't abandon the run. Some of the stuff that they're throwing, you know, when they're throwing those bubbles, when they're throwing the a couple of the quick outs and things that they threw on the outsides, those are RPOs, people. That's a run play. I broke this down back in 2007 when I was writing for Knoll Digest years ago. That those are RPOs. That's a box count. It's a read based on what the overhang does at the snap, and you go ahead and you throw it depending on that. Seriously. So those are run plays, and you shouldn't be running into an overloaded box against an elite defensive line. It makes no sense. You're setting your offensive line and your running backs up for failure when you do that. If anything, the one mistake that they made was running Akers on second and goal from the four on one goal line trip. They probably shouldn't have run the football there, or certainly shouldn't have run it between the tackles against that particular look. I'm not sure if Blackman missed a check or whatever. I mean, I don't know exactly what they gave him there, but not the best call. It's not as simple as just run the football, particularly against that front. And, you know, the issue is that you have one little piece that goes wrong on one thing. You have a wide receiver make a drop on one drive that costs you. You have a key false start on another. You have a quarterback who's responsible for a false start on another, which with a young guy you're going to get once in a while. You get, a quarterback misses a read in one case. And again, these are minor things. It's minor stuff, but down when it's in tight like that, that stuff matters. And again, against that kind of defense, you're not going to be able to just go in and, well, we're just going to run it four times once we get inside the 20-yard line and we're going to walk in. You don't expect to do that. Alabama couldn't do it against Florida State. So, you know, again, they were able to run the football. They were able to move the football like they wanted. Were able to create all sorts of scoring opportunities and just couldn't cash them in. And I will say, you know, it was obvious the difference once Auden Tate went out. Tate was by far the most consistent wide receiver in this game. Balled out. I mean, he had 9 catches for 138 yards. Average 15 per. On, I believe it was 11 attempts. So it's a really, really good efficiency. Average target length was... I saw something earlier, and I don't have it right in front of me, but it was the average target length of a pass, the average pass downfield that targeted Tate was something around 12 to 15 yards, whereas with Gavin he was targeted at about 4 or 5 yards, and the average for Nooney Murray was something like 3 or 4 yards. So the one guy that was really downfield and was able to produce consistently was Auden Tate. And when he went out, you could see that Florida State was not quite as effective offensively, which is why it's so critically important that Tate is not out for the year. If Tate were out for the year, then I would adjust my win percentage down by a win or two, because I think he's that important for Blackman at this point. That said, we did have a unicorn sighting. George Campbell played a pretty good football game in this game. George Campbell, had the other big downfield play, 3 catches for 85 yards, had the big, I think it was 61-yarder, where, you know, he put them in scoring position once again. Now he put the ball in the turf, but, you know, flashed why he's such an exciting prospect on that play. And if he's able to provide a little bit more of that, then that again completes the offense much more. They'll be able to be more efficient down the line. But again, he's not the red zone weapon. He's not the weapon in tight that Auden Tate is. And that's when Florida State didn't have Auden Tate in the second half for those situations when they got the ball down in the red zone, that really hurt him. But other things, a few other observations. I won't go too much longer here. A few other observations. Right now, I know there are going to be people out there who are going to disagree with me, but right now, Jaquez Patrick is still a better back than Cam Akers. There's a reason that he's starting. And it's because Akers is still... He's still missing lanes at times. He still has to get used to the kind of vision and rhythm that he has, that he needs to have as a college running back. Things open up a little bit differently. He's less disciplined on some of that stuff than Patrick is at this stage. Yes, he's much more likely, once he figures all this out, to bust big play after big play after big play than Jaquez Patrick. But right now, Patrick is also much more likely to actually hit the proper hole and get a decent gain. So that's the situation that you're at. And also, Akers still needs to improve some as a blocker. That showed up a few times in this game, but that's no surprise. Patrick still could be better there too, but Patrick is a good bit more consistent than Akers in that respect. And, you know, there were a couple cases where Akers had the had a lane and just either missed the cutback or missed the proper lane. The most obvious was the third and short where he tried to bounce it, and if he sticks it up in there, he probably gets a first down. Fisher, you know, chewed him a new one on that one for a reason. But there was another where he had a lane that opened. It's, you know, is a cutback lane on a zone play, where if he's running with the proper tempo and the proper rhythm into the hole and is able to hit that and jump cut that back, probably scores. Instead, he hit it 100 miles an hour and ran straight into the back of his offensive lineman and missed it. There are a few too many cases of that just yet. But the signs of him being elite are there. The vision will be there. There are times where he did see stuff and you could see the acceleration, you could see all of that coming together, and it's like, oh yeah, that's pretty special. But he's not quite there. He's, you know, and you know, I think there's a lot to be encouraged by with him, but again, there's a good reason that Patrick is still the primary guy, especially early in games, and he's still getting the time that he is. And I expect that to continue for a little bit. But note that Akers, through two games, has 22 carries, and Jacquez Patrick has 12. So that tells you where things are trending, and it's going to continue to go there. But once again, and actually a good mantra to think about when you're watching Akers is when you're coaching running backs, a mantra that is often used by running backs coaches is slow to quick through, or slow to fast through. And that basically means you don't want to get to the hole. You don't want to get to the seam or to the line of scrimmage so quickly that you don't give the seam or the hole time to develop, time to open. You have to be just patient enough to let it open and see it, and then you've got to be fast through. And he's got the burst to be really fast through. The problem is that right now he's fast too, just a little bit. Reminds me a little bit of Davey Ford back when he was at Florida State as a true freshman. You could see that elite speed, but sometimes he'd hit that hole just a little too quickly. And he learned to slow it down just a little bit and then burst, and Akers will too. Dalvin Cook had a similar thing that he had to learn as a freshman as well. This will all come, and I think Akers is further along than Dalvin was initially. So, you know, this will happen, but that does explain a little bit of why they're dealing with the rotation the way that they are. There's still some room for growth there, but yeah. So all that said, bottom line, this is, you know, when you actually do a fair analysis and you go back and you watch what happened in this game, this is not a situation where Florida State is just is so far and away a disappointing team, and they're just not playing at the level that you would have expected of the 2017 team coming into the year. And I'm saying this as someone who I predicted this team to go undefeated. So keep that in mind. When I watch this team, they're not worse than I expected them to be. They are who I thought they'd be. They're playing really close to the level that I expected at this point in the second game. But unfortunately, a few, three key mistakes against Alabama submarined that game. Okay, that's fine. Well, then one other factor, they lost DeAndre Francois, who, by the way, I'm not sure that if Francois had played this game that Florida State would have won. Blackman played that well. I'm not sure that Francois would have played so much better that Florida State would have won the game. It's possible that they would have executed a little bit better in the red zone because of, you know, Francois managing things a little better, or because of his ability to run, but it's not clear. You know, they lost in other areas in this game. But that being said, you know, so you lose to Alabama. But then what changes everything is you get 3 weeks off without the chance to fix things against a Louisiana Monroe. You play NC State, who's probably the third best team on your schedule, behind Clemson and Alabama. And you do that off of that 3-week layoff with a true freshman quarterback, still trying to figure things out, still, you know, you haven't gotten the chance to give Akers more live rounds, more chances to really figure out, you know, how to do this at the college level, all of that stuff. And then you still play well enough that you should have won the game. They should have won this game comfortably the way that they played. They played well enough to win this game by 10 or 17 points. But instead, some key situations, a few key penalties. The issue is they played well enough to win, but they didn't play well enough in key situations to win a game where they had to overcome some key breaks that NC State did get. That's the thing. They didn't situationally play well enough to overcome a team that played well situationally and got every possible break they could get. That's the situation. But again, when I watch this game, this team is no worse than I thought they'd be. And I know that sounds crazy. People are, you know, there are going to be some of you in my audience and some of you on social media and elsewhere have already been tweeting at me and otherwise messaging me saying, you're out of your mind. This team's way worse than we all thought they'd be. No, really they're not. The outcomes have been worse than we expected them to be. But the actual play of 95% of everything that we've seen, in more than that, 97% of what we've seen so far, the actual play on the field has basically matched what I expected, has been at that top four, top five level. That's how close the margins are in college football. That's how close the margins are in football. I've coached in games where we dominated the game, and somehow when you look up at the scoreboard, you go, how? And it's just because of one drop here, one missed block here, one coverage bust here, and you dominate 98% of the game and you're in a dogfight late in the fourth quarter or you're losing. And you know that, and the fact that Florida State was down 10-0 from the beginning in this one didn't help. But again, the reality is that this team basically is as good, or really close to as good, across the board as I thought they'd be. Now, Blackman being the starter changes a little bit, but actually I think by the end of the year, that's going to more or less be a wash if he continues to develop. So then the next question is, what should we expect from here? I mean, I saw people today seriously talking about whether Florida State's going to be bowl eligible. Come on, people. Really. All that tells me is that you look at records, but you're not really aware. You're not really able to break down what's actually happening and why on the field. And then these are the same people who are going to critique and rip coaching. They can't tell you why it's happening, what's happening, really. They can only evaluate the outcomes. And they're going to be the people who are going to tell you that it's all coaching and this, that changes need to be made in coaching in order to fix these things. How would you know? By everything you're saying in every other respect, you're showing me that you really don't know what you're talking about on some of that stuff. So as I look forward on the season, yes, Florida State has a number of losable games. It coming into the year was the hardest schedule I thought in the country. But I talked about it in the preseason. Of the quarterbacks, you know, I'm a quarterback person when it comes to, you know, what games are really losable. And I said Alabama's losable because it's Alabama. You know, it's a coin flip. Clemson, you know, that's Clemson. There's a number of other games that are losable that, quite frankly, last year, the losable games were games where you're playing against a Mitch Trubisky, you're playing against a Chad Kelly, you're playing against a Deshaun Watson, you're playing against some elite quarterbacks. And the best quarterback other than, you know, the two true elite programs on the schedule, it's Ryan Finley. for NC State. And that was why in the preseason I'd said, you know, the NC State game is the one I'm probably most worried about other than Alabama and Clemson. Because, you know, they got a quarterback and they've got a defensive line. They're going to make it tough to run. Going to force Florida State to beat him through the air. And they got a quarterback that can get it out quickly and is good enough that if he heats up, you know, he could do something. Well, but what that also says is I don't think anybody else on the schedule really has the quarterback play to beat Florida State. Could someone beat Florida State? Yes, Miami could. Florida could. Louisville certainly can. That's the other quarterback I was leaving out, Lamar Jackson, for those of you who are saying, you know, who are going to come back and go, oh, wait, you know, you're saying Finley's better than Jackson? No, Jackson's better than Finley. But Louisville doesn't have anywhere near the defense that NC State does. I had NC State beating Louisville in the preseason for that reason. Lamar Jackson, you know, if he heats up and goes crazy, you know, they can beat anybody. But they also, I think, are going to have a hard time stopping the run against Florida State. They don't have the defensive line. They don't have the run-stopping ability that NC State does. And Florida State averaged over 4 yards a carry with its running backs against NC State. They protected fine against NC State. They'll be able to handle Louisville's defensive line, defensive front. Louisville's secondary is terrible. Now, once Jair Alexander's back, it'll be a little better, but it's still not great. So, you know, as I look at it, I still think I have not seen anything on the field that has given me any reason to change what I think is going to happen for the rest of the year. Which is to say, I think Florida State most likely finishes with either 8 or 9 wins, with the most likely loss being against Clemson. But it's entirely possible that Florida State finishes 9-2. It's not out of the question. I know some of my listeners think I'm a madman, but you were the same people that when I said the same thing after the UNC game last year, that Florida State, well, you know, they may lose to Clemson, and I had them losing to Clemson, but I'm not sure they'll lose again other than that. Y'all called me crazy then. I was right then. I still think, based on what I see now, that, frankly, there's not much reason to think that Florida State is in any worse shape now than right after the Alabama game. And really than right before the Alabama game, with the exception of a different quarterback. It's the same team. Quality of the team is the same. Now, one last thing, and this is some discussion of coaching and whether, you know, there will be changes, whether there should be changes made. And I tend to be loath to discuss these sorts of things, particularly on the podcast. I don't like speculating about men's livelihoods, and it's not just the men. I mean, they make plenty of money. So, you know, that they deserve criticism when they deserve it. You know, they can take the criticism when they deserve it. Let me put it that way. But you're also dealing with families. And you're dealing with, you know, when a guy loses his job, yeah, they get paid a lot, but they work like crazy for those for what they get, and their families, you know, are dependent on what they get, and that means a whole family has to uproot and leave and go somewhere else, and that's hard on a family. So I tend to be pretty loath to speculate on this stuff, particularly when you've got a program and a team where I know the coaches actually work hard. And actually do a good job. So, you know, and that is the case at Florida State. Florida State has a good coaching staff, and they have a very hardworking coaching staff. So all that goes to say, you know, I tend to be less quick on the trigger for a number of reasons. And also because, you know, when you evaluate a lot of stuff that gets blamed on, oh, that's coaching. Guys, coach at any level, and you'll find out how little coaching is involved in some of the things that you see. That, yeah, well, coaching matters, and yeah, coaching really helps, and yeah, coaching can reduce the likelihood of certain things, but some stuff just ain't coaching. That said, when you watch this game, I did think that it's hard to escape the idea. It's hard to escape the conclusion that there still is something just a little bit off, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And a lot of it is just mentality and just the seeming lack of abandon and freedom that Florida State tends to play with defensively. And, you know, you get a lot of people that talk about the lack of discipline. If anything, I think sometimes what I see is players playing just a little bit too hesitant, a little bit more thinking than there needs to be, instead of just recognize and trigger. And, you know, I think a good parallel is to watch Florida State in this one, and then immediately watch the Georgia game against Mississippi State, and you see a little bit of that difference there. Now, here's the thing. I want to be cautious against saying, well, that just means you absolutely need to have, you know, defensive wholesale staff changes. I don't think that's necessarily the case, particularly since this was game two after a 21-day layoff and you're dealing with certain amounts of rust and hesitance that result from that. And NC State also does a ton with misdirection and all sorts of really irritating stuff that everybody struggles with in that regard, and they make everybody hesitant. But it is something that I'm going to keep an eye on the rest of this year. I mean, I think everybody's recognized that this is a money year for the current set of Florida State assistants. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they develop from there on. But you know, they've got to be able to play again. You know, the standard for this stuff, if you want to look at it that way, the standards for this kind of mentality or what you want your defense to look like are set by Brent Venables at Clemson, Don Brown at Michigan, Nick Saban at Alabama. I think you could probably put Kirby at Georgia at this point on there. Those standards for what defenses should look like in terms of the kind of dominant approach the mentality there, that needs to be there. And again, I'm not going to judge too quickly after two games, but it is something I want to pay more attention to as the season goes, that if things don't really completely shift in that regard, in terms of the mentality and the dominance on that side of things, even if the defense is really good, then that does suggest to me that there need to be some changes that need to be made in that respect. On the offensive side, I don't think there need to be major staff changes. I just don't. And, you know, I think Florida State fans should be very grateful that Jimbo Fisher has not made the major mistake that Mark Richt did of giving up offensive coordination duties and play calling duties, which once Richt did that, Georgia began to crater as a program. That was when the decline began. You can trace it. Go back and take a look at when Mark Richt gave up play calling duties and look at the year-by-year results after that. Fisher is aware of how this works, and it's a good thing that he, as one of the top offensive play callers, offensive coordinators in the country, and some of you out there are going to laugh at that, but Nick Saban will tell you that every day of the week in private. Nick Saban, you get him off the record and he'll tell you on the record, but he'll tell you off the record that if he could have Jimbo Fisher as his offensive coordinator, he would make that trade tomorrow. And he would have done that over Lane Kiffin or anybody else. So if that's the guy that Nick Saban would want to be calling his offense, you know, I think it's probably a good idea that he stays calling the offense at Florida State too. Could they get a little bit more help there in terms of some additional assistance for Jimbo in that offensive room? Maybe. But in that respect, some of the changes there might not be popular for the fans if those changes were made. And, you know, frankly, some of the other coaches on that staff what they're able to do in supporting roles in other respects really matters. Randy Sanders is a really good coach. He's also a good play caller. And, you know, they've got a good set. So I'm less quick to say scrap it all. I do think that when they hire that 10th assistant, you know, it's going to need to be a defensive assistant. It's going to need particularly to be a secondary assistant. And they need that to be a good hire. They need that to be somebody who's going to make that defense better. But, you know, we'll see what other changes are going to be made. I do expect that Fisher will make some changes after this season. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what changes are made. But I thought that there would probably be changes regardless of what happened this season. There were going to be changes after last season, but because of Alabama on the horizon and a team that looked primed to be a potential national title contender, you know, that's maybe you don't screw with it that particular year. Maybe you wait one more year to make that change. In any case, you know, I think the program is healthier than anybody at this point seems to realize. I think, again, the team is not appreciably worse than anybody expected. They're just 0-2. Sometimes you play well. Sometimes you play well enough that in other circumstances, if you get a different officiating crew, if you get a few different bounces, you're at least 1-2, or you're at least 1-1. Or, you know, there's not a hurricane and you're 3-1. Or you don't make the two really big momentum-changing mistakes against Alabama, or you hit a couple of the throws in the first half that you missed, and you go into the half 21-7, and you come out and you've played exactly the same, and you're 4-0 with a win over Alabama. It's the same team. So once again, as is usually the case, things are rarely as good as they seem when they're going well, and they're even less often as bad as they seem when they're going poorly. And, you know, that is the case with this Florida State team right now and with the program itself as a whole. It's also important that the players understand that as well. And that's going to be one of the more difficult things that the coaching staff is going to have to get across, to make sure that the players for whom, you know, the national title hopes that they brought into the season and the confidence that they brought into the Alabama game, that's pretty shaken right now. But they've got to realize you guys are the same group, just as good as you were before you had two losses. Same team. Just get a couple of these little things fixed and become a little bit better in a few of these key situations. I mean, last year's Florida State team was number one in the country in red zone efficiency. This one needs to, you know, improve in that area. They'll make some of those corrections. They'll get better there. That's something that Fisher's teams have typically been very good at. And, you know, as that all resolves, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how far this team is actually able to go. And the thing that I would encourage my listeners to do is to actually enjoy the ride the rest of the year. You know, don't let yourself just be completely beat up by the fact that, you know, the team's title hopes are basically gone by October. Enjoy the growth of a really good football team the rest of the year. And yeah, it'll feel like, you know, something really close with, you know, at the end of the year, like, man, really missed an opportunity. Yeah, opportunities were missed. But enjoy the growth of a really good football team the rest of the year. And a young football team, one that next year, you know, basically all the key pieces on offense are going to return. Yeah, some really important pieces on defense are going to be gone, but the cupboard's not bare on that side of the ball either in terms of the young guys. So, you know, enjoy the progress, enjoy the growth, and enjoy what I think is going to be a winning streak that's going to start here this week against Wake Forest. And it's a good Wake Forest team. Can this Wake Forest team beat a Florida State? Yes. But I certainly don't think they will. All right, well, that's going to do it for us today here on the Unconquered Podcast. Once again, this podcast is brought to you by Lewis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Hire Lewis. Make sure if you're going to sell your home, make sure you hire him. Get him to do the photography and the videography, the smooth walkthrough video that I'm telling you, he's going to get your house sold for the best possible price if you live in the greater Jacksonville area. Make sure he's the one that's selling your house. Also, make sure that if you're looking for a house, that you give him a holler. He'll help you make sure that you get the best house, find the house that you're looking for in the right area for the right price, get it negotiated into the best possible range. Thanks again to Lewis for sponsoring the show. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
I made this.